Welcome everybody to Advanced Analytics Webinars. My name is Ashish Bhatia. I'm a Senior Program Manager in Azure Machine Learning team. Remember, this is an ongoing series of webinars. We have a new learning topic every other Tuesday, and we take questions as well every session. As you all know, the topic for today is Azure Machine Learning for Engineers. It's an interesting topic, and we have a special person to talk about it. But before we go there, let me quickly go over the format of the webinar today. As usual, we have a one-hour session. We'll have 40 minutes of presentation and demo, and then we'll follow it up with a Q&A around 15 minutes. The session is being recorded. It will be available online after the live session. We'll also send up a follow-up email with recording and the slides. Feel free to ask questions at any point of time during these sessions. So joining us today is Dan Greco. He works as Principal Software Engineer in the Azure Machine Learning Group. Dan has spent 16 years as a software engineer, primarily working on middleware solutions for mobile and messaging products. He works out of the machine learning office in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Before I hand it over to Dan, I have a poll questions. We always try to kind of take as much questions as possible during the live session. We get more questions than we can answer during the session. So we're trying to connect with different ways of reaching out and help answer all the questions. So pick your options here. Give us your feedback on what you think is the most feasible way of answering these questions. Should we extend the session by 30 minutes and take up Q&A at the end of the session? Should we hold a tweet chat for 1 hour after the live session? Or should we just open it up for 24 hours so that people can post questions on Twitter and the speaker can answer? Or the one that we have been doing so far, have a Q&A session a week later on Twitter. So I'll give you 30 seconds to pick your options and give us some feedback on that. Thank you. Okay. Thanks for your answers, and I'll hand it over to Dan then.
Okay. Welcome, everybody. My name is Dan Greco. Thanks, Ashish, for the introduction. As you said, I work in the Cambridge Mass office working with the machine learning group with a group of data scientists. I started here just about a year ago working with the scientists with some external companies, helping to build demos and applications to present the work that was being done with the scientists in the machine learning platform. Along that time, I didn't really get what they were doing behind the scenes with the experiments in machine learning itself. And so I started playing with the tools that they have and asking lots of questions, which led me to create this presentation. I felt that
me as an engineer, I could help some other engineers at least understand some of the basics.
So again, I just want to be clear. I am an engineer and not a data scientist, but I work with them. So this session is intended to give you some of the basic tools to understand machine learning by discussing some of the terminology that the data scientists use and covering the tools that Microsoft offers in their Azure machine learning platform. I will, during the session, we're going to go through an end-to-end solution. So we're going to create an experiment. We're going to modify some of the things in there, publish it as a service, and then we'll consume it at the end.
So as engineers,
we're kind of all used to the rules-based approach.
We're presented with a specific problem. We know what our inputs are. We know what outputs we should produce from our algorithms based off of that input. And then we build that into applications, create software, deploy it, and then have to work with it through its life.
So what is machine learning? In a nutshell, machine learning is computing systems that become smarter with experience. And by experience, we mean past data plus human input. I think we can all understand what the data is, but the human input comes from the data scientists doing feature engineering and communicating what the outcome is expected from the input data. So machine learning provides a powerful way to construct and study algorithms that learn from data as opposed to the traditional rules-based programming models that engineers are used to. So I'm going to get a little more specific, and I'm going to talk about a manufacturing kind of environment. Now, machine learning is useful for a multitude of problems, but sometimes I find it easier just to give explanations by using a hardware kind of approach. So in the manufacturing world, we have lots of sensors. In our rules-based approach, we would estimate the conditions and sensor readings that lead to a failure and then create a bunch of rules around that. And that's what our algorithms would be. On the other hand, machine learning enables the computer to learn the relationships between the sensor readings and the outcomes to predict what the next likely outcome is going to be. So given a set of input, it can give us information back about whether it expects a success or a failure. As time goes on and we produce more and more data, we can then go back and retrain our experiments to make them smart. So how do we start? We have to figure out, well, what are we trying to solve, right? We have to get to problem detection. So there's lots of different problems we can solve here. Predictive maintenance. So we can try and figure out if a piece of equipment is going to fail, what's going to fail on it. There's anomaly detection, which maybe is not as robust as a predictive solution, but useful figuring out when a system may be operating outside of its bounds. And churn, so customer churn, trying to figure out turnover in our customer base or a company's customer base, why it's turning over, and maybe things we can do to reduce that. So to do this, once we have our problem, we need data. Data is crucial to the machine learning experience, and it comes in a couple of different flavors here. And this is where some of the language that the data scientists use. As an engineer, we're used to a feature being a certain function call or a bit of functionality in an application. In the machine learning world, a feature is a measurable input field to our algorithm that we're going to use to make some kind of prediction. So there's lots of feature work that's done on the data with the scientists to try and figure out which features in the data make sense for the problem set that they're trying to solve. The other data is labels. And this is the historic results that have been observed with a given set of features. So these are the answers we're trying to figure out, or we want the machine to learn to figure out. We take these pieces of data and we combine them together into something called training data. And this is the pairing of features and labels. So given a set of inputs, what was the outcome? Which is an important part of machine learning. So when we talk about the types of learning, there's really two types of learning here. One is supervised, in which case the training data includes both features and labels. So we know what the inputs were and we know what the outcome is. In an unsupervised learning case, our training data set contains only features. Now, this can be useful for many things, but predominantly for anomaly detection. So let's take an over example. Let's talk about a production line example, and we're trying to figure out which machines are going to fail on our production line, or when they might fail. We have two types of ways to learn this. One is supervised, and one is unsupervised learning. And to figure out what we're going to do, we have to figure out what data do we have. So in a legacy system, we likely have reams of data that are laying around, and experts, subject matter experts, that can help us tie together when that production line failed and when the production line succeeded. So we can build up a nice training set with features and labels and come up with a predictive maintenance type of solution. If it's a new line, we likely don't have very many failures recorded for it. So we have potentially lots of data, but all of that data has to do with successful runs of that production line. Given that, we can still put together a model of anomaly detection that will detect when that line is running outside of the bounds of what we know to be normal. In either case, the manufacturer can use this data and use the machine learning to determine before they start their next run of that production line, is it going to be successful or not? And if not, to do some work on the line, at least to do inspections on the machines, which will reduce expensive downtime and potential material loss. Now I want to talk a little bit about the tools and the environment that we, or the data scientists work in. One of the key tools to creating these experiments is the Machine Learning Studio. This is a completely online tool that you use your web browser for, so you install no software. You can collaborate with people anywhere in the world. You create yourself workspaces, and those workspaces can then be shared with other users. And they can come in and look at the work you've done to either help themselves or to help you figure out a problem. All of this is composed, your algorithms are composed visually, so it's a lot of drag and drop, get your work done, and pressing of buttons. And when we get to that end, you'll see just how easy and useful it is. If there are modules that you need or functionality that doesn't exist, the studio can be extended by creating R and Python modules that can be run as part of your experiments. Those are typically the languages used by the data scientists. However, it does contain quite a few best-in-class algorithms that are already built into the system. An overview of the entire machine learning service includes a lot of other Azure features. First, we need our data. So the data can be kept in Hadoop, databases, blobs, and other tables. Then we have our studio. So the ML studio will pull in this data, and the scientists can then take time testing out algorithms, trying different methods before they can publish this as a Azure RESTful service or a full Azure web service. That service can then be consumed by any client that has a network connection and can form an HTTPS request. But likely in the real world, we do not want individual objects calling directly into the API. Likely they don't have the smarts to know that they should quit if there's a problem. In a traditional setup, clients, as in a factory floor, would all speak through a gateway, and the gateway would then push that data up into the cloud. Now, I'm not going to get too deep into this, but as part of that process, there's lots of other Azure services
that are useful there, including Event Hub, Stream Analytics, Data Factory, which can massage the data prior to coming into the ML experiment.
So I want to cover an example where we will walk end-to-end through how this works. In this example, we have a factory full of gadgets. It's like an IoT example. What else? There we go. So all of these gadgets sit on the factory floor, and they report up to the cloud. The data that they report are three features, effectively. Their temperature, operating temperature, the voltage being used by it, and a rotation speed. Now, working in this contrived example, we've come up with our own data sets to solve this problem. And the devices report some other information. So I am going to switch to a live screen here. And there we go. So for our problem, we've collected a training data set where we have our temperature, voltage, and rotation speed. We also have a column in here called state. State would be our label in this case and is considered to be an in-error flag. So a 1 means the device is in error, 0, the device is okay. We also have a time field, but because we contrived this data, this is just a numeric field that increments over time, and our final field is a device ID that's making the report. If I scroll through this file, we'll see we don't have a tremendous amount of data. There's about 10,000 rows in here and only 10 devices. So that means we have 1,000 rows per device, but because we are able to inject errors and noise into the data stream, this will suffice for what we're going to try and solve. Here we have the Azure Machine Learning Studio. This is where the work happens. So I created myself a specific web namespace for today, or workspace. And in this workspace, we can see that it's empty. But in this area, I would be able to see all of the experiments that I've created. I would then be able to see all of my web services that I've created, any data sets that I've uploaded, modules that I've trained. And then in the settings section, this is where I can set up access to the system by coming to this Users tab. I could invite more users here. Once they get an invite, then they can come into the workspace and see the work that's being done. So the first thing we need to do to create an experiment is to upload some data. So we're going to use the New button down at the bottom of the screen. Pick a data set from local file. And there we go. So I'm going to browse for a file. And I just happen to know where that file is already, or it does. And we're going to call this webinar training. Now this will take a few seconds to upload. It's a relatively small data, but we need to upload the data into our workspace so it's available for us to train the data or train our model. So the next thing we want to do is we want to do a new experiment. When we pull up the experiments, there are lots of example experiments that are already here that are also available in Gallery, which I'll talk about a little bit later.
This gives you a basis for starting
an experiment and some examples of how to do some other work. For our purposes, I'm going to choose a blank experiment. So from here, the first thing we need to do is bring out our data set that we just uploaded. Okay. So the next thing I probably want to do is save this. Giving it a name. Okay. So now we need to start building our experiment. One of the first things we want to do in any experiment is to put in a split. Split allows us to send part of our data through the training algorithm and part of it off to scoring. And this is so we can allow the training to be generalizable. And we want to train on a subset of our input data
to get our results. If we gave it all of the data, it may overfit for the problem, and that's not what we're trying to do.
So we're going to have the split come out. Now, in the split, like a lot of the other components, we can come in here and configure how it's going to split the data, and in which, you know, what percentage of data goes out the left port and what percentage goes out the right port. We are going to leave this as an even 50-50 split. The next thing we'll need is a train module, train model. The train model we're bringing out, and a train is meant to learn on a label. So given a full set of information coming in, what is the label it's trying to learn on? So we're going to connect half of our data to the split. But the other half, the other port of train model, is expecting a trained model or an untrained model to be plugged into it. In our case, our state or our label field is a 0 or a 1. So given that it's really a binary value, we can use a 2 class algorithm or a 2 class classification. And in our case, I'm going to choose the 2 class boosted decision tree. I think I need to kind of move over, make a little more space. There we go. We take our untrained model and we plug that into the other side of train model. But train model still has a problem, or it's reporting that it's not ready. And it says it has a value required. So we need to open up the property windows again for train model, and we launch our column selector. We need to tell the train model which of the fields it needs to learn on. And in our case, that's state. Okay, so now train model is looking good. The next module we need is going to be the score model. And here we go. The score model is going to score the data for all of the data points. So it's going to tell us how we're doing.
But we'll see.
It takes information from the train model, but it also needs other data. And this is where the other side of our split feeds into. Finally, we are going to bring out an evaluate model. Evaluate is going to let us or give us insights into the accuracies of the model and how well we did with our training. Now, evaluate model can evaluate a single model or two models. In our case, we're doing a very simple experiment, so we're not going to try other two-class models to see if we get any better results. Again, we are on relatively limited time, so what I want to do is just get through the experiment. So once we've set this up, we click the Run button. And the Run button at the bottom is going to run our experiment, feeding in our training data, going to train a model using the two-class boosted decision tree, score it, and let us know how we did. Just have to give this a minute to run. There we go. So it's been run. So now we can look at what score model produced for us. And it gives us many columns, so it outputs exactly what we fed into it, and then it gives us a label and the probability that that label is correct. Evaluate model can also be visualized. And this lets us know our accuracies. So how many false positives and true negatives that we had. Our accuracy doesn't look terrible. Precision potentially could be improved. But again, for our purposes for this talk, we're going to assume that we're complete. During the work, again, if we come to another one of the nodes, our two-class boosted decision tree, we could change some of those parameters and potentially change the outcome and increase the accuracies, or that's what we would hope. But again, I am not going to play around with those. We're going to settle in with this experiment. So now that our experiment, we feel confident about it, as confident as we're going to feel for today, now we would want to publish this. So how we do that is we need to create a scoring experiment. And we create the scoring experiment because we want to create a trained model from this experiment before we publish it and do some other work. So clicking the creating scoring experiment, you can see, does some work for us. It's created a trained model for us. It's provided a web service input. Our score model still survives, and we have a web service output. But we can see from our incoming data, or we've seen, that we're providing the label. We don't want to provide the label coming from a device in the field, because it doesn't know what state it's in. So we're going to come back over to our search, and we're going to look for a module called Project Columns. Project Columns allows us the ability to filter out some of the data that we're getting back. So in our example, we want to go from our training data into Project Columns as an input there, and our output from Project Columns to go into our score model. We can see that we have a value required here. So let's open up our Properties tab. And we need to pick columns that we want to be reported. Well, we clearly want our three features, temperature, voltage, rotation speed. What we don't want is state, but we will still ask for the time and the ID. And click OK. Similarly, we're going to connect score model to our project columns. And the output of project columns is going to go to our web service output. And again, we need to pick columns. We're not interested in this case, putting all of the data we put into the algorithm, getting it back out. What we really want is the time the device reported it, the ID of the device, and the scored label. And the scored label in this case is going to be the predicted state. Close up properties. And now we're done. So again, we've done some modifications. And we need to run our experiment one more time. Again, this will just take a minute or two. The first time is usually the longest. The next step from the scoring experiment is going to be to publish it as a web service. So now that we've seen everything ran okay, we don't have any issues with it, we click a button down here at the bottom called Publish Web Service. By doing this, this is going to turn this scoring experiment into a live Azure web service, which can now be called externally. There are two ways to call this service. One is with request response, which takes in a single row of data or a single set of features and returns one result. This is a synchronous call. You make the call, you'll get your result immediately back. The other and more likely case in an industrial environment is going to be a batch execution. This is going to contain a file, or the batch file contains multi rows of input. So in this case, the data has come in through Azure Event Hub and been socked away somewhere, and we run a batch job on it, potentially daily or hourly, for all of the records inside. This is run asynchronously. The call is made out to the batch service. We get a job ID back, and with that job ID, we can continue to query to see how we're doing. Now, to call either one of these API endpoints, we need an API key. To find out information about each of these services, we can just click on the hyperlink. From there, we're brought to a help page. On this page, we're given the URI with which the API lives behind, the web method we should use to call it, the headers that are required to be contained in the call, the request JSON body. So the payload is going to be JSON, and we can see the fields that we've requested to come in are the five we asked for, not including the states. In this case, we can also pass multiple rows, but it's not as efficient as batch execution. If you wanted to test a couple of devices at once, this would be the way to do it. Going down the page, we see the response information. We get a 200 if everything's good. The header information we should expect to see, and the output JSON. So we can see that the output contains three columns, which is exactly what we asked for, the time, the ID, and the scored label. Now, the name of the output, output 1, we can see here, and the name of the input, which is input 1, come directly from the experiment. And if we come back over here, these values can be changed. Just click on that, and we can see the value here. So those aren't magic. They are set up, and you can configure those any way you like. You don't need to keep the names as they were. Okay, so we go back to the RRS page. If we continue down this page, it gives us information about input parameters, output parameters. But the nifty thing is, at the bottom of this page, We now have C#, Python, and R code, which can be used to call our service. These are fully working example bits of code. You just bring them in and you can test them. Python and R, primarily, again, data scientists are using Python and R, so let them use the tools that they use to create their work with. C# for the developer community. You know, I know there's crossover in both, but these code examples are pretty great. So I'm just going to go back to the top of this page now. Not the code page. So I've created a little bit of a little application that's going to call any service, provided the URI and the key, and it takes the input format as we defined. So I've done this a few times. My app is able to manage these. So in the app, we're going to provide the URI, the thing we just created. We come back to the web service, and we grab the key. And I'm hiding the time field because we're just going to jam one in. And the device ID is going to be 1. I didn't want to add those here for complexity on the UI. And now we can just hit send request. In this field, you'll see the URI we're calling with what key. Here's the payload I'm providing. Here's the output, again, as we expected. And we get a scored label of 0. Again, in error is 0, so the device is operating normally as the screen shows. We're going to just jack up the temperature on this specific device. And we get back the device is in error, which is, again, what we expected. So to just kind of just to give a brief overview of what we just did, we brought in our data into Machine Learning Studio, created a training algorithm to create a trained model. We published it, or we created a scoring experiment from there that gave us our trained model. And if we come back to our page, we should be able to see our training model now lives up here. We could use that in any other experiment that we would like. We published it as a Azure web service, and then we're able to consume it through an application. Again, in the simplest of cases, we consume it and get the response back. Again, a device isn't going to do that, but we don't have enough time to talk about all of the environments around it, just the machine learning side of this. Now I just want to cover a couple of the resources that are available for people. One is the Azure Machine Learning Studio. Again, anyone who is interested in trying this out, you can follow this link and create yourself a free account. With the free account, you can upload data, create experiments, publish Azure services, and test them in the RRS method. You would need another Azure subscription for the batch execution because that requires a file to be uploaded onto Azure storage. For people who aren't necessarily as familiar with the algorithms as a data scientist, one of the data scientists here has created a pretty handy cheat sheet. And the cheat sheet will help step you through what type of data you have and what type of problem you're trying to solve and help you determine which algorithm is best for you. Now, Marketplace is a place for APIs. And this is going to be a place as more work is done on the Azure platform and Microsoft and other industry people publish APIs for consumption. This will be where a lot of engineers will come to take off-the-shelf APIs and incorporate them into their applications. Gallery is another place that has lots of examples, and when we did a new experiment, we saw a bunch of those examples there for the choosing for how to solve other problems. And it also encompasses the APIs that are in the marketplace as well. So in summary, I just want to point or to mention that, you know, machine learning is a very powerful approach to problem solving. And with the Azure Machine Learning Platform, it opens the doors for millions of people to become familiar with it and the concepts of machine learning and potentially even become data scientists or create models for themselves. With that, I would like to push this to the Q&A session. And thank you very much for listening.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for a very, very informative session. Let me start picking up some questions. By the way, also to kind of mention that we have a senior data scientist on the call, Danielle Dean, with us. And she'll help us answer any data science-related questions if they are. So I'll take the first question, which is around
training data. While it's training data and input in the scoring experiment,
it seems like trained model would be enough. Daniel, do you want to take that question?
Sure. Yeah, it's a really good question. So it looks like when you look at the scoring experiment that it's also using the trained data. And although it's an input in there, it's actually not using the trained data in the web service. It's just using it to serve as a schema for the web service. So that's why you need it in the scoring experiment. It doesn't actually store the data. It's just used for the schema.
Thanks, Daniel. Another question around trained model coming from Sagar is, once the trained model is created, do we have to keep the training data around? Or training model will continue to evolve with the new data that's fed in?
I can approach this one. So the training data that you originally create the model does not necessarily need to be around. Your scoring experiment that you create can then be retrained. So this is a whole other topic of API retraining, and that maybe we should cover in another webinar. However, once your model is created, there are ways for you to feed it new data files and retrain the model and determine if its accuracy and precision is greater than your original training. And if it is, you can replace the model within the web service so that any future calls to it will produce more accurate results.
Okay, thanks. Another question coming from Celine is, how do we do this in-house if you want to go without the cloud?
Well, for the Azure machine learning, this is cloud only. I will defer the on-site to Danielle.
Yeah, so for on-site, we suggest now to use R. A lot of data scientists use R for on-site problems. But we also work with a lot of customers who are interested in the cloud but need to do things like anonymize their data due to regulations and things. So there's also ways that you can do things with your data to allow moving to the cloud, such as anonymizing before upload. Another thing is that you don't actually need the training data in the cloud once the model is trained. So one option is that you upload the training data into Azure ML, like Dan showed, train the model, and then you turn it into a web service, and you can actually delete your training data after that. And then that's just a web service in the cloud, but that can be consumed from anywhere, so your data is no longer stored in the cloud. So that's another option as well.
Thanks, Daniel. I'll start picking up some engineering questions. When will it be possible to create modules with .NET and C#?
That is on the roadmap. The team that works or that builds the module architecture also resides in our building. They are currently focused on the R and Python. The C# modules are on their radar. But again, the language predominantly used by data scientists being Python and R, that has been their primary focus. And I'm assuming sometime next year, but don't quote me, I don't have any release dates on that.
Sure, thanks, yeah, that's good enough. question coming from Kanan is, can I read data from my on-prem SQL database? Reader module only supports Azure Blob, Azure SQL.
I don't believe the reader can, but you can use Azure Data Factory to move the data into Azure.
Question coming from Vikas is, how do we detect particular algorithm for a real-time use case? Daniel, you want to take up that question?
Sure. Yeah. So the particular algorithm that you want to choose is highly dependent on what the outcome is that you're modeling. So it's not so much that you're looking at real time versus bash, but more of what is the actual thing that you're looking to predict. So in the case that Dan showed with the state, you're predicting a binary outcome here. So you can basically choose, and I'm generalizing to make it easy, but you can basically choose any of the two class algorithms there, and the cheat sheet gives you some guidance on which ones might be better for certain scenarios. Honestly, what most data scientists do in practice is try lots of things and see which one evaluates the best. So you might try something like the boosted decision tree as well as logistic regression in this case and see which one performs the best. There's examples in the gallery if you're looking to just get a handle on lots of different ways and lots of different approaches. The Azure Machine Learning Gallery has lots and lots of examples that you can look to. So it's more about the outcome that you're looking to predict rather than the scenario of real-time versus batch and those sorts of things.
Daniel, question coming from Suresh is, what is the maximum size of data you can upload? And I'm guessing it's for training. Maybe it's
the training data is limited to 10 gigabytes.
Yeah, from Azure, and I think it's actually limited to 2 gigabytes if you upload it from your desktop right now, although it's definitely a thing in our roadmap to look at bigger and bigger data. There's also an option if you search for Dracula online, Dracula algorithm from Microsoft, there's an option to actually train in conjunction with HD Insight on up to a terabyte of data or more. So there are some options for big data as well.
Thanks, Daniel. And that's just for training, that limitation, right?
Yeah,
the APIs are scalable. If you're calling more and more, you can really scale out the APIs.
Thanks, Daniel. Question coming from Rodrigo is, can you use ML for multiple response models and not only binary outputs? Daniel, you want to take that?
Yeah, that's a great question. You definitely can. So there's algorithms built into the studio for binary outcomes, regression type of outcomes, which is basically like a numeric value. There's also algorithms for clustering, which is more of the unsupervised techniques that Dan talked about. There's also models for recommendation systems. And then there's a custom, you can write actually any custom model that you want using R and Python. So if there's a modeling framework, for example, we don't currently have time series models, but you could write any kind of time series model that you wanted using R and Python. So it's really supposed to have the fundamental algorithms of binary and regression, those sorts of frameworks, and then extendable. And of course, if you need examples, again, turn to the Azure Machine Learning Gallery for that.
Thanks, Daniel. So somebody made also a comment that it would be helpful if you can share your CSV file that you're using.
So sure.
Maybe as part of the follow-up, we'll send that across as well.
Yeah, that's great. Sure.
Another question coming from Vikas is, are the models portable? See, if I want to run the model I created somewhere else, can I do that? And it's outside Azure, he's asking.
I believe
yeah, you can't port the model to run locally, but because it's a web service, you can basically invoke it and put it into anything you want. So you can put it into a desktop application, for example, that reads out to the web service. So you can't port them, you can't move the model code, but you can consume the web service from anywhere, like Dan said, that has an HTTPS connection.
Right, and one of the benefits of doing that is that as you retrain that model and it becomes smarter, your application is still only reliant on calling a web service and your application code does not change.
Right, great point. Question from Gabriela.
And that actually,
Go ahead, Dan.
Sorry, Ashish. I just wanted to know, I see a few questions coming across about retraining, and there's definitely a retraining API, like Dan just alluded to it, where you can retrain over time. So that really makes the cloud a great option, where you put a model into production, and you can consume it from anywhere, but then you can use the retraining API to make the machine learning even smarter over time.
Yeah. And we'll probably plan out a webinar around the retraining topic as well. So question from Gabriella was, would the input to BES work with CSV files saved from Excel, or does it have to be JSON format?
For the training data?
Input to BES.
The input to BES is CSV.
Okay, thank you. I'm reading through the questions. Let me pick up some. So can I use R script and its existing various statistical models as well as Python packages inside Azure ML? Daniel, we want to take that?
Yeah. So there's an execute R model as well as a create R model, and then an execute Python script, which allow you to write all your own custom code. So the built-in modules are really nice because they allow you to get a lot of stuff done really quickly. But if you want to write something custom, then those are options for you.
Okay, thank you. Somebody is asking, if I do not use project column function, will my experiment fail?
No, it won't, but the input JSON would then have a column for your labels. And your output would have considerable noise in the output. But certainly, project columns is not a requirement. I used it to filter down the input data to remove the labels. And I used it to filter out some of the additional noise on the output score model because I wasn't interested in it on the output. But that wouldn't stop the service from being published or working.
So Vikas is asking, can we use streaming data like Twitter as a source?
For training data?
So that's not mentioned, but I believe it's for scoring, I guess.
For scoring, if you could certainly use it as you would with the sentiment analysis API. So if you had a way to feed the data in and make the RRS calls, certainly you could do that.
Yeah, and last week we did.
Yeah, in fact, last month was dedicated to Azure Stream Analytics. We did two webinars in that area. So look up a recording for that, and we talked about sentiment analysis.
And the streaming there. So there's more question around retraining, and Scott is asking, what is retraining API? Can you elaborate a little bit?
Sure. So as we trained initially a model, we gave it some data, and it created a model, and it created a trained model. The retraining API is a way to massage our original training model to output or reach experiment to output a model. So as we feed in different training data sets or different data sets that can be used to train, the model, a different version of the model will be produced using the same data. And in that case, we can look at the newly created model and the current version of our model, determine which one is better, and use that in the deployment in the service. So there is as an engineer, there's a lot of interest in retraining, and I think I would like to do another webinar on retraining. There's a lot of topics around it, and it's a little deep to get into in a short Q&A session.
Yeah, I took a note of the retraining webinar. Question from Rodrigo again is, what happens if input values have null values? Daniel, you want to take that up?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So it depends on how you deal with null values in your experiment. So So we didn't go into too technical details on training, but there's a lot of things you can do with missing values. So basically what you'd want to do is in the training experiment, you'd want to use something like a clean missing data module to do something like impute. And if you had that clean missing data also in your scoring experiment, then it would deal with missing data the same way. So it just depends on how you deal with it in the experiment. And so you'd want to make sure to set it up that you deal with the null values as you'd want to and make sure that it would still give you a result.
Yeah, we have 3 more minutes. I'll pick up a few more questions before we kind of wind up. Alan is asking, can model setup and API creation be done programmatically?
They are working at exposing that functionality, but today, no.
Okay.
Although I will say it's really easy to continue. If you have a few models on there, you can basically wrap your mouse around and copy a whole bunch of modules and really expand your experiment out, try multiple algorithms really fast by using copy and paste. And there's also a button at the bottom, copy between workspaces, which allows you to, if you have an experiment in your workspace and you want to share it with somebody else who's working in another workspace, move that stuff pretty easily.
So again, one of the things that is kind of close to a developer's heart is how can I version my ML models during my dev cycles? Is it possible to version them?
To version them, there's no way it reports a version back to you. Realistically, your versioning would be done almost manually when you publish services and name them.
Yeah, the old runs of a model are in Studio. You can see previous runs, so you can see what changes you've made and revert back to something. So within an experiment, there's the previous version. If you want an even higher level, you can manually create 2 workspaces and then copy between workspaces to just do a little backup if you want to be extra careful. But the nice thing about the cloud is a lot of this stuff is done for you, so you have, like I mentioned, the previous runs already saved. Ashish, maybe we can answer further questions on Twitter. Looks like somebody
right. So that we are almost at the hour, and kind of there's so many more questions and overwhelming right. response to the session. I would request people to kind of post questions on Twitter. Use our official handle ML@MSFT to ask your questions, or hashtag AzureML. And Dan and Danielle both will kind of spend some time answering questions on Twitter. Thank you all for attending the session today. Thanks to Dan and Danielle for giving a very, very informative session. Have a great day. Bye-bye.